In the Pantheon of Nature verse, you'll find an awful lot of poems dedicated to bees, or at least inspired by them. Award-winning poet Patty Ann Rogers gathered up a handful of her favorites to share. She told Anne Strangechamps why bees have such appeal.
You have to be cautious around bees. You know, you can get hurt by them. You can get stung. And yet, people, I think, are fascinated with their industry and their organization. And we have this phrase, busy as a bee, and it's one of the first cliches we probably learn. And also, it has this whole function of the bee going into the flowers. And I think there's an element of the human spirit that wishes that we could do that too, to go down deep into this beautiful, soft, fragrant blossom, and then at the bottom find sustenance from the sugar there. And so I think that's part of it. I think it's the function of the bee. I think it's the industry of the bee. And also, I'm going to read a poem about the sound that bees make when they're all together. And that is a really kind of a something that echoes in your breast. It's so loud sometimes if you're around a hive or a field of flowers where many bees are busy. So I think the sound is something that poets relate to.
Oh, that's fascinating. Well, this makes me want to get straight to some poems. I know you brought a bunch with you, including several by Emily Dickinson.
I did. And Emily Dickinson, actually, hers are unusual in that they really concentrate on the bee and in a way that some of the others don't. Sometimes the others are more about human intimacy or about the poet himself or herself. And Emily Dickinson did not title her poems, most of them. So I don't have a title to read. But this is the poem. His labor is a chant, his idleness a tune. Oh, for a bee's experience of clovers and of noon. The next poem is also about a bee. To make a prairie, it takes a clover and one bee. One clover and a bee and reverie. The reverie alone will do if bees are few.
That's lovely.
I know. She could do it, couldn't she?
The thing that strikes me about Dickinson's, they're very simple, but you do have the sense that they were born out of close observation of bees. And the tone is somehow sort of intimate and admiring.
Oh, I think so. I think you're right. And of course, as with all the most wonderful poems, they are never about one thing. And sometimes what you think the poem is about is not the major subject of the poem. And Emily Dickinson does that well, I think, too.
Of course, Dickinson was famously reclusive, so it kind of makes sense that a woman who spent much of her life in her home and her garden would write about bees. But by contrast, there's another one you brought in that's fascinating by Sylvia Plath, who I don't think of as writing especially pastoral poems, and Plath seems rather appalled by the bees.
Well, in this one she does, and you know she wrote several poems about bees just prior to her death, and some people like to cluster them and make a sequence of bee poems all together. Her father was an entomologist and wrote a book about bees and studied them, so she has that connection to bees that the rest of us probably don't, or not many of us anyway. And this poem is not, I don't think you could call it a pastoral poem. And yet I think it's wonderful in its language. I think if you have heard anybody who has been around a hive of bees or a bee's in any kind of number in a field or something, you'll identify with this poem, I think.
Will you read it?
I will. And the title is The Arrival of the Bee Box by Sylvia Plath. I ordered this clean wood box, square as a chair and almost too heavy to lift. I would say it was the coffin of a midget or a square baby, were there not such a din in it. The box is locked. It is dangerous. I have to live with it overnight, and I can't keep away from it. There are no windows, so I can't see what is in there. There is only a little grid, no exit. I put my eye to the grid. It is dark, dark, with the swarmy feeling of African hands, minute and shrunk for export, black on black, angrily clambering. How can I let them out? It is the noise that appalls me most of all, the unintelligible syllables. It is like a Roman mob, small, taken one by one, but my God, together. I lay my ear to furious Latin. I am not a Caesar. I have simply ordered a box of maniacs. They can be sent back. They can die. I need feed them nothing. I am the owner. I wonder how hungry they are. I wonder if they would forget me if I just undid the locks and stood back and turned into a tree. There is the laburnum, its blonde colonnades, and the petticoats of the cherry. They might ignore me immediately in my moon suit and funeral veil. I am no source of honey, so why should they turn on me? Tomorrow I will be sweet God. I will set them free. The box is only temporary.
Wow. Now that's a pretty complicated poem. I mean, Plath seems to go through some kind of evolution as she considers the bees.
Well, she kind of goes back and forth, I think. I'm appalled by all this noise, and what will I do? Maybe I won't even feed them, or I'll send them back. And she does, though, then, of course. Tomorrow I will be sweet God, I will set them free. But will she? Because she already changed her mind two or three times.
Patty Ann, did you bring any of your own poems?
Well, I did bring this one. This is from my book called Eating Bread and Honey, and that was actually the subtitle to this poem. As the title is Service with Benediction. Chunk honey, creamed honey, buckwheat honey on buckwheat bread. Like glass lanterns, there's enough concentrated summer sun caught in these jars of comb honey to give us ample light to travel by on a winter night. Sesame breads, sausage breads, almond breads, sweet panettones, cassava cakes, and millet cakes are laid out on the table before me beside these bowls of molasses honey and heather honey, wildwood honey, gathered by wild bees, hollows of honey, horizons of bulging loaves. So I eat sun and earth by the slice and spoonful, suck yeast bread soaked in alfalfa honey, dip crust dripping from the dish to my mouth, lick gold sugar from my fingers. I swallow pure flour syrup brought from the sky, chew the kneaded spike and germ of fields and gardens. Surely I become then all the arabesques of bee dances and the cultures of bee bread balls rolled from nectar pollen. I comply easily with the lean of heady buds and grasses waxing and waning at their cores sunk in the earth. Two gifts, I heard the temple bakers say, win for immortality. The priest immersed his dead body, naked before burial, in a cistern of amber honey. Allow me now in the fullness of this morning to consume all clover honey and white wheat fire to see my way clearly through the cold night coming.
Poet Patty Ann Rogers reading one of her own poems about bees. Rogers has been awarded 5 Pushcart Prizes and the Lannan Literary Award for Poetry. Anne Strainchamp spoke with her.